This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. The most recent Marquette Law School poll shows narrowing margins for candidates in Wisconsin's gubernatorial and U.S. Senate races. It also takes voters' temperature on issues like abortion and gun violence. But how much do opinion polls matter and how accurately can they predict outcomes of elections? Here to discuss is director of the Marquette Law School poll, Charles Franklin. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
All right. Well, starting on our conversation, you released results of the most recent poll June 22nd. It is the last poll before the August 9th primary. So Let's just dive into what they say, what voters said about the Republican primary for governor. This was the first poll that asked about Tim Michaels in the Republican primary race for governor after he entered the race kind of late on April 25th. Mm-hmm. Results showed he's now neck and neck with the previous leader, Rebecca Clayfish, at 48% to 47%, but that's still that margin of error, 4.3%. Also still 32% of voters saying they are undecided or don't have enough information. When you look at this particular segment of the poll, what are your takeaways?
Yeah, I'm sorry, it's 27 to 26, not 47.
Got it.
But it's still a one-point margin, so that's the point. It's very close. I think we see those two very close together, and then there's a significant drop-off to Nicholson and still further down to Ramthan. So it's clearly a two-person race at this point. Nicholson has held at 10% or 9% since February without much movement. Ramthan's actually gone down a little bit. So now let's focus on those two front runners.
Would you expect that to change?
Well, it could. You never want to say never. Something could happen. People could change their minds or be mobilized. And we still have a third of Republican primary voters who haven't made up their minds. So that's where change could come in. But that said, our April poll was finished the week before, literally the day before Tim Michaels entered the race, and that's why we haven't looked at him before.
And he had that kind of healthy showing. Was that a little bit unusual?
I think it reflects two things. It reflects his very intense advertising spending. So he didn't just enter the race. He jumped into the race with very substantial advertising. And it also reflected that in April, nearly half of Republicans said they hadn't made up their minds. So there was a lot of available voters out there. Now, what happened is Clayfish came down from 32 to 26. So she lost 6 points after Michaels entered. But that means that she only came down 6 when he picked up 27%. So that leaves at least 21% of those folks that must have come from undecided to him. So he did eat into some of her strength, but not a whole lot. And as a result, we have a very close race. You mentioned in the intro that, well, will these predict the outcome?
Right.
I think it's pretty obvious a one-point race cannot be predicted at this point. And we have, till August 9th for voters to make up their minds.
So more reason for people to tune into your poll then.
Well, as you said, we will be doing the poll again after the primary, but in July we'll be polling nationally on the U.S. Supreme Court, which made some news this last short period,
too. Absolutely. We'll talk about that, too.
As a result, we'll be tuning in after the race and then looking at the general election.
See how voters feel, sure. Well, on the Democratic side, Governor Evers, you said, had this early advantage in the general election for governor. We're showing some poll results where voters were asked who they would vote for if Evers was matched up in a one-on-one race against various different Republican challengers. And again, with that 4.3% margin of error in mind, Governor Evers holds a 4-point advantage against Clayfish. An average rises to 7% against Michaels, and those are widely believed to be the top two challengers. The Marquette poll shows Evers with the various other advantages, including party loyalty. But you had mentioned when the poll was released that Republicans have an enthusiasm advantage. What does that mean?
Well, when we ask people, how enthusiastic are you voting in the fall, about voting in the fall election? That question in previous years has proven to be closely related to actual turnout.
Even at this early stage?
Well, it gets tighter and tighter as you get closer to the election, of course. But people who say they're very enthusiastic to vote, 93% of them then go on to vote, or we think they voted. They tell us they voted. If you look at the next level of enthusiasm down, that drops to just under two-thirds, 63%. And then it drops below 50% for other people with lower levels of enthusiasm. So looking at the very enthusiastic to vote folks is a way of seeing which side is more likely to turn out its voters in the fall, with the caveat that, of course, this can change as the campaign evolves, as events happen, and so on. In our April poll, both Republicans and Democrats were at 57% very enthusiastic to vote, dead even. And that contrasts with the national polling that shows Republicans with an enthusiasm advantage this year in almost all national polling, including ours. So in June, we saw this bump up on the Republican side while barely changing on the Democratic side.
And how do you account for that?
Well, I think a large part of it is probably national issues rather than state issues. It's Joe Biden's continued decline in approval rating. It's the near universal concern for inflation now that really dominates in our polls and national polls. And there's the natural disadvantage of the president's party in a midterm election, where the president's party almost always suffers losses in the midterms. But that's compounded by inflation, the Biden image, and so on. Now, I want to stress, that's one poll that shows a big gap. And our previous polls had shown either no gap or just a small Republican advantage. So does this continue? I don't know.
It'll be something
we'll
you'll
see.
Watch.
Yes. And also, the Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe versus Wade came out after we finished the June survey. So again, does that stimulate and boost participation by pro-life forces that have worked for 49 years to overturn this case? Or does it boost the pro-choice people who now see a right that they had counted on for nearly 50 years taken away? And I think both of those are not impossible scenarios to see how they play out. We have to wait until we have the data to see. I can speculate, but it's just speculation. Sure. Let's wait for the data.
So a lot of people might just be looking at the candidate polling results, but what you're saying is that enthusiasm factor is really a big deal as well.
And in June, when we looked at that, if we look about all registered voters in the state, Evers has an advantage over all of his Republican opponents. But when we look at only the voters who say they're most enthusiastic to vote, each of those, well, three of those Republicans take at least a small lead over Evers. So you can see the difference between all registered voters and the most enthusiastic brings the election in a Republican direction. Though, again, it's a very tight race for the most enthusiastic, but turnout matters. The parties will be doing everything in their power from now to November to turn out their voters.
We'll see that on our TV screens, I'm sure. You Indeed. Also said when we released the when you released poll results that we have a very pessimistic electorate. Yeah. What does that mean?
First of all, it means on the question of is the state headed in the right direction or has it gotten off on the wrong track? Wrong track has soared since 2019, early 2020. Right direction has collapsed into the 30% range.
Is that typical for a state?
These are unusually negative views both in the state polling and in the national polling. We've certainly had wrong direction, go way up in the depths of the Great Recession of 2008, 2009. But that number had come up, excuse me, in 2018 and 2019. Then as the COVID pandemic hit, we saw it start to move sharply down, and it has simply continued to move down both nationally and in the state. But it doesn't seem perfectly connected to approval of the governor, for example. And it's not as connected to approval of the president as you might think, but more so for the president than for the governor.
So in divided government, you don't know why people are feeling pessimistic.
Indeed, and lots of people will say things are in the wrong direction, not because of my governor, but because of that other party that controls the legislature. Or they'll say it the reverse. My party in the legislature is trying to do great things, but their governor is preventing it. So it's a very mixed picture about exactly what people mean.
All we can draw the conclusion is people aren't very happy.
I've been calling them grumpy. And I think that captures a good bit of the feeling in both parties. Another version of that is Republicans, by and large, are pretty convinced that the 2020 election was fraudulent in some way. Democrats, on the other hand, are equally convinced that Republicans are trying to take away and steal the next election. And so we really have both parties deeply divided on this issue, seeing it in exactly the opposite way. It's the other party that's interfering with elections. And as a result, they both feel very pessimistic about democracy in America right now, but for quite different partisan reasons.
Interesting. Another big race on the ballot is the race for U.S. Senate, and you asked questions about U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. Here's what the poll showed when voters were asked about a matchup between Johnson and each of the four leading Democratic challengers. Johnson slightly trails three of the four Democratic candidates polled, including 46-44% against Mandela Barnes, 45-43% against Sarah Godlewski, 44-43% against Tom Nelson. In a possible matchup with Alex Lazary, Johnson slightly leads in support, 45-42%. What do you note in those results?
I think this race is clearly even closer than the governor's race. In the governor's side, Evers had a modest advantage, 4 or 7 points. 4 is inside the margin of error, by the way. But here we're seeing all four of these contests well inside the margin of error. And again, a difference of 2 percentage points is nothing you can count on holding through the election. I think it says that the Senate race looks easily winnable by either side, but it's a much tighter race. The governor's race may tighten, too. Let's not assume that that won't happen. But the Senate side looks very close and very close across the range of candidates. Lazary does look a little weaker against Johnson than the other three Democrats, and that's sort of an interesting result. But I'd like to see more evidence that that's really holding up. Lazary is in second place for the nomination, with Barnes a little bit ahead of him.
And he has a decent amount of campaign money.
Lots of money, lots of advertising. And so rather than try to predict these outcomes, I think the takeaway is that we have a much closer, more balanced Senate race. And one of the things that comes from that is Senator Johnson still has a net negative favorability rating. He's 8 or 9 points underwater on favorability. But among Republicans, 67% rate him favorably, but over 86% say they'll vote for him in a contest against any of these Democrats.
So that enthusiasm.
Enthusiasm helps. That party brings people home to their party's candidate, even if they're not super positive towards that candidate. You actually see it in the governor's race, too, where about 15% of Democrats have a negative view and a disapproval of Evers, but only 7% of them are voting against Evers. And so, again, they don't, I guess a smaller group, but they disapprove of Evers' job handling, but they prefer him to any of the Republicans. And on the Republican side, the same thing. People come home to their party. So this is why in Wisconsin, where we have such an even balance of Democrats and Republicans, we end up with these very close races that we've been having since at least 2000, where the party balance keeps races competitive, and the tendency to voters to come home for their candidate, because they may not be thrilled with their party's nominee, but they generally really don't like the other party and have a hard time imagining switching and voting for that other party.
So the question is whether or not they actually vote then.
Yes, turnout. Midterms are always lower turnout than presidential. Historically, Democrats have had a bit more problem mobilizing their voters in the midterm than Republicans have. And then we get the unique features of this year's elections, and that'll matter for the Senate side and the governor's side.
How accurately, you mentioned the word prediction, how accurately can opinion polls like this predict what happens
sure.
in an election?
The further away you are from the election, the less accurate they are, in the sense that, of course, things can change between now and November. As you get closer to the election, the accuracy improves, but it only improves up to a point, so that even a poll taken the week before or 3 days before will still have error. Now, we have the margin of error for these polls. That's about plus or minus 4%. Over the history of the Marquette poll since 2012, when we first started it, our average error is to be off by 2.2 percentage points on the margin between the two candidates. That's pretty good. Our worst performance was in 2016, when we were off by a little over 6 percentage points, and we were better, off by 3 or 4 points in 2020, depending on whether you were looking at the high turnout estimate, which was a 3-point error, or our normal turnout estimate. And of course, we know we ended up with high turnout, but weren't sure that that would happen beforehand. So 3 or 4 points in 2020 was a pretty big error. The six, a little over six in 2016 was by far our worst error ever.
Well, a lot of polls were off in 2016.
Yes, we had good company, but I'm afraid that's the cold comfort to to me.
I was going to ask you about 2016. Yeah. That was the last time that Ron Johnson was on
That's
the
right.
ballot, and that was the year that, like we mentioned, a lot of polls were upset by predicting Hillary
yep.
Clinton would win, and Donald Trump clearly won, and then even Ron Johnson's race was considered an upset, and I
yep.
know that Russ Feingold had been a predicted winner by the Marquette poll.
Right.
Have polls changed, or what were the factors yep. that now we kind of wait for?
Well, let me talk about the Johnson case for just a minute, because it's also relevant to this year's election. Johnson's net favorability had fallen off to negative territory in 2015, and he was pretty negative until now, his lowest net favorability ratings. But what our polling did show is that throughout the spring, beginning in February, his net favorability started to go up and get better and better, and by late spring had moved into positive territory. Likewise, and stayed that way through the election. Likewise, in trial heats against Feingold, Feingold had a big lead early when Johnson was net negative. But over the summer, that started to tighten. And in our last polls, we saw the race tighten in the late summer, tighten again in September, tighten again in early October, and our final pre-election had Feingold by just 1 point, well inside the margin of error. And I think, actually, we captured that trend extremely well, and in the end, a 1-point margin is a toss-up race. Johnson ended up winning by just over 3, and obviously I wish we had been on the positive side of that to get that completely right. But I think we saw the dynamics in that race in a way that we never saw it in the presidential race. We did not see a tightening of the presidential with Trump improving over the fall, whereas we did see that happening with the Senate race. So it's a mixed thing, and it's the puzzle to go to the second part of your question, what do we do differently? It's a puzzle that we could capture the Johnson trend so well and miss the Trump trend. Mm-hmm. Now, some of the things that have been widely talked about are, what about the factor of education? That polling throughout its history has had more trouble reaching less educated respondents than more educated respondents. But and some pollsters weren't taking that into account in 2016. For better or for worse, our polling, my polling, has always used education as one of the things that we take into account.
So and you can't blame that.
No, and so having taken education into account, we still had that mm-hmm. error. What it still looks like is that while we have about the right balance of Democrats and Republicans in those polls, we seem to still be missing a particular modest subset of Republicans that are really Trump supporters. And that meant that we were very close to Hillary Clinton's vote, but we underestimated Trump's by about 6%.
Those people in either 2016. Weren't answering your calls, weren't on the list, or were they maybe exactly. giving you answers that were different than how they voted?
Well, all of those are possibilities. I think the most likely one is not doing the interview. We ask 40 to 45 questions. People don't lie consistently through 45 questions. It's just so much easier to tell me what you think of these people. And so I tend to discount the idea that there was systematic misrepresentation. But I think it is very believable that Trump motivated voters to come out and support him who had not generally voted in the past. We know that participation in surveys is also related to civic engagement. So people that attend church a lot or volunteer in their communities or are active in community theater, all of that civic engagement also gives them more of a reason to respond to polls and share their opinions with the rest of us. So the folks that had been more alienated from politics, more withdrawn from politics, but were brought in by Trump, I think there's good reason to believe we're also more reluctant to agree to do a poll. And back to those numbers, it doesn't have to be a lot of people to throw us off. So sure. 4 to 6% reluctant to respond is enough. And then add the vagaries of maybe some of the Clinton voters decided not to turn out because mm-hmm. they hadn't seen the campaign very strong here. She didn't visit the state much. Those sorts of things are all part of the story.
Kind of ancient history, but just good learning, yeah. I'm sure, for a pollster. Yeah. If we want to talk about issues that motivate people to come out to the polls, I know that you ask a number of issue-related questions in the poll. You asked, clearly, inflation, as you discussed, is on people's minds. The poll all showed that inflation is the main issue. 75% people say they're very concerned. That's up from 69% in April. 58% say concerned about abortion. Policy, 56% concerned about gun violence. Healthcare had been a leading issue in yep. the past. Now it's at 47%. And the coronavirus fallen to the low point in the year at 18% of people saying they're very concerned. Do you see those kind of issue concern ratings changing a lot between now and November?
I think it's hard to imagine that inflation doesn't just stay the predominant issue. We're not that far away from November, and in the history of inflation, it's really rare for it to suddenly go sharply down. Now, it might turn down and start to ease, in which case that might shift the concern about it, but I don't expect that one to change a lot. I think other things could become more important. Abortion policy is the one that popped up in the June survey, and again, that was pre- the court's decision.
58%,
sorry. Yeah, so it's high. And I think will probably grow. So I think those things can change. And I would, at least in my mind, I don't recall that pre-existing conditions was a big issue in the spring of 2018, but it became a really predominant issue in the fall
in
of 18.
In the healthcare field.
In the healthcare right. field. Mm-hmm. And, we don't see healthcare at the top of this list. I'm not expecting that to come back because we had an election on that, and I'd be surprised if it reappeared. But it's a good example that sometimes an issue will pop up that we didn't see coming, that, or at least I didn't see coming, but then does appear and becomes important.
Your poll often asks about people's thoughts and opinions on abortion policy, and I think I've heard you say that Wisconsinites' opinions really haven't changed a whole lot in terms of the trends over the years, but you might anticipate that it could drive people out to the polls this time around?
I think the motivation side is the really interesting thing to watch. We've got over 10 years of questions about abortion, and we've not seen over that entire time any significant change in the percent choosing abortion should be legal in all or most cases versus illegal in all or most cases. That's just stayed really stable. What we did see in our national poll after the draft opinion was leaked, but before the decision, was that Democrats started rating abortion as more important as an issue to them, but the motivation to vote, that very enthusiastic about voting, didn't really change between the parties. So one of the things we'll be looking at in the July national poll, and we'll certainly be looking at in the August Wisconsin poll, is now that that decision has come out, who is more or less motivated to participate, and how do they see the candidates on the abortion issue as well? But none of our data, either in the state or national, showed any evidence that people changed their policy preference on abortion after the court's opinion leaked. And I think in one sense that's perfectly plausible, right? We've had an issue for 49 years. People have had a long time to make up their minds. And so the court ruling really hasn't shifted people very much. Again, now that the decision has actually come down, we'll see in July and August whether that has shifted anybody at all.
Another issue that I know you ask about where there's pretty good partisan divide is gun violence, and that's certainly been in the news a lot, even today. What are the polling trends for Wisconsin voters around that issue of gun violence?
Relatively stable on the questions we've asked multiple times, which have to do with gun policy. So we've consistently seen about 80% in favor of red flag laws with a judge's judgment that someone is a danger to themselves or others. We've seen a similar high level of support, 79% in this latest poll, for universal background checks for private sales and gun shows. In this latest poll, we asked about raising the age to purchase a gun to 21 from 18, and that has about 57% support, a good deal less than the other two, still a majority. Most of these are not things that the legislature or the governor have been able to bring anywhere close to a legislative decision.
Why is that? Don't these polling results translate to public policy?
I think that's a great question. And partly it's because expressing these views on a poll is different from going to the polls and casting a ballot on the basis of them. If you're a Republican and think there should be a red flag law in the state, does that mean you're prepared to vote against your Republican candidate for legislature on that issue? And I think the answer is rarely does that become an issue that people would actually vote against their party on this basis. Then there's the usual answer, and that is intensity, that there are a lot of people who think a red flag law makes sense. But among the folks that are most pro-gun rights, they see that as the first step to infringing their rights, and they're very intense on this issue. So the question is, who shows up at your county party meeting? And it's not the pro-red flag folks, it's the pro-Second Amendment folks that show up. And so they exert a strong influence. Finally, does the party see any electoral advantage in taking this position? Democrats see an advantage by being pro-gun controls of various kinds, but I think Republicans almost universally have not seen any electoral advantage in actively trying to promote these kinds of laws.
So how should candidates and policymakers use this poll?
Well, I think, first of all, they're doing their own polling in which they are testing, how do I frame this issue and what works under their framing of the issue? You know, what is your argument for a red flag law? Or what is your argument against that if you're asked about it? So that's not my job to do their research for them. They have their own pollsters and do that. I think on all issues, really it's a question of any candidate, regardless of party, finding the issues that voters care about and that motivate voters in this particular election. I mentioned pre-existing conditions as an issue that just exploded in 2018. And so the candidates that had seized that issue and were ready to use it and were convincing to voters matters a lot.
And this time?
And this time, I don't know yet. I think that we don't see, other than inflation, a single issue that's really bubbled up. I do think that in the governor's race, I would be surprised if we don't hear arguments about divided government versus unified government, because since there's very little chance that the legislature would flip party hands, it's almost certainly going to remain Republican, then the question you have in the governor's race is, do you keep divided government and the stalemates that we've seen from that, and credit where credit's due, we actually saw two budgets that got passed on time, things that hadn't happened in the unified party control in the last 2 years.
So what do people really want for their government in Wisconsin?
Yeah, and are you comfortable handing power to one party? Many people thought that the Walker years were great years because of unified government. Many other people thought they were terrible years during that time. So I'd be surprised if we don't see that as an issue during the fall.
That's important to people.
But is it education? Is it roads? Is it health care? Is it inflation? Stay tuned.
Well, good to know. Thank you so much for educating us. Maybe we'll have to have you back.
Happy to come anytime.
All right. Thank you for joining us, and thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we sit down with the decision makers and highlight the issues that are important to all of us.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.